Welcome back.
Wow. Who'd have thunk?
Shall we do a show?
I think we shall. Is this the show? Are we in now? Is this it?
It's always the show, Joe.
Okay, that's fair. Man, well, what do we even talk about first? I don't even know. How long has it been?
Based on my records here, it has been since September 23rd, 2025, that I made the announcement that we are on a hiatus. August 13th, 2025, I Prefer Fun Employed. That is the last episode.
Wow.
So to all the fans that were just clamoring, just could not get enough. Here we go. We've got some more for you.
You're welcome, fans. I don't know who you are or where you are, but I need to obviously start a GoFundMe for all of these clamoring fans.
Patreon.com.
Yeah. Gosh.
All these podcasts now that the ad market is so bad do that. They do oh, you can get the unedited show or you can get no ads. Not that we have ads to begin with, but they have all these perks where if you give money, you get to, you know, get these incredible perks.
We probably couldn't get away with that, could we?
No, we could not.
I mean, you've literally been getting an endless person.
You're welcome, and no extra cost to you.
Yep, there you go. You're welcome.
We need to explain what we've been doing for the past several months.
Yeah, that feels good.
One of us has changed a lot. One of us has changed not a ton. One of us has changed a lot, and I'll let the listeners decide who, but we'll start with Joe.
Since August, things have been good. I moved to Missouri, which has been great. I started a job at Good News Productions International. I'm not even sure. Did I even have a job last time?
No, because you were fun employed. That was the whole thing.
Yeah. That's really funny. So Good News Productions International, GMPI here in Joplin, hired me. And I love the job. It's awesome. It's basically, Zach, I think I've told you this, but basically our whole goal is to create media that shares Jesus. And so we do that in a lot of ways it's kind of hard to explain every little part of what we do, but we have teams all over the world. I believe the stat is 17 teams in 25 countries. That might be reversed. Maybe it's 25 teams, 17, but somewhere in there I see the stat once a week at least, but we just, all of those teams focus on making stuff that shares Jesus with people. So anything from full length, hour and a half movies to, 30-second reels to books and curriculum to podcasts to music. We have teams in Mexico and we have teams in South Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Central Asia, Europe, India, Thailand, Southeast Asia, Philippines. I mean, gosh, you name it. We're pretty much everywhere. It's a really cool organization to work for. I've made a lot of cool connections so far. And I'm loving it, honestly. They hired me as a media and marketing designer. So I spend most of my day in the Adobe Creative Cloud, which is awesome because that's what I studied in college. So I get to do a lot of graphic design work with just logos and stickers and but also InDesign work with magazine and just print pieces that we do, Photoshop a lot. A big part of my job is also social media. So, video, audio, reels, and just deciding what stories to share and all of that. So it's really fun. I love the job. It is exactly what I studied in school, and it's for a faith-based organization. So feel like I couldn't have found a better job and God totally provided. So there you go. If you want to follow along, follow GMPI on social media. I think it's at GMPI USA. I don't even know. I just post things. So
real-time follow-up, GNPI USA, Good News Productions, is indeed the social media channel here. We have 39,665 lives impacted here. And maybe, who knows, Joe made this graphic for you. What most people don't know about GNPI.
That was last week. I actually made that, which is funny because, dude, social media is such a weird, nobody needs me to say that. Everybody knows that social media is crazy and always changing. But literally, I made that post originally in September, I think I made a who is or what most people don't know about GMPI. It kind of is a clickbait way to just tell people who we are. But my thought was, man, I mean, we've grown so much since I've been there, which sounds like a flex, but it's not. It's just what you get when you post every, you know, four times a week. But anyway, it just was like, man, well, most people probably didn't even see it anyway when it came out, because Instagram and Facebook don't even guarantee you a spot in your followers' feed anymore. So we just decided that we were going to redesign it and post it again. So it's pretty much the same as the last one. If you go back far enough, you can see it. Just designed differently.
This is actually something I've wondered about. So obviously I'm looking now, and as of today, you have 1,187 followers and 743 following. So do followers even mean anything whatsoever in the age of, like, you're saying, if Instagram and Facebook don't show the subscribers anyway, what they asked to see, do those numbers even mean anything? Because back in the day, it was a big deal when, oh, this YouTuber just hit 1 million subscribers. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And then they got, you know, 100,000 views per video. And it's like, what are the other 90% of the people doing? And
are you looking at Facebook or Instagram?
I'm on Instagram.
Okay, nice. My view is it sort of like increases your reach, or what Instagram will do for you. So it's like, if Instagram sees, if the algorithm, I guess, sees, you know, oh, wow, this person has 300,000 followers, it might go, well, okay, we're going to show this to more people, you know, because we already know that people are engaging with it enough to follow this guy. But really what I hear most is, you know, you don't want to just go for views or interactions. You use Reels for views, and you use just regular posts, you know, on Instagram it's a carousel, but on Facebook it does the whole grid looking thing. But you know, you use both of them for different things. Reels are for views and the posts are for interactions, and both of them are good. And you just got to sparse them out and use them when it makes sense to use them. So today I posted a reel. I don't expect to get a ton of interactions on it, but I do expect to get a lot of views. I expect that, you know, the view rate past 3 seconds is going to be decent, because it's like it was literally me shoveling snow and then some verses about that included snow that come up on the screen. And so I don't know that it'll do well. I'll see tomorrow. But it's a wild wasteland, Western, you know, no rules environment. But it's been fun to learn, that's for sure.
One thing I was wondering about was, have you ever had a short video on Facebook or Instagram that just goes completely, maybe not completely viral, but for some reason it gets 500,000 views and you're not even sure why?
Not that big yet, but we did. So what's funny is, this is another thing, is it's all about target audience, right? So on, I mean, everybody knows this, Facebook is trending now more towards, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, boomer, you know? No offense to anybody who is one of those, it's fine. That's just the reality. Things that make sense to post on Facebook don't always make sense to post on Instagram. And so we already have, whereas, you know, obviously Instagram on the other side of that coin is more geared toward, you know, younger Gen Z. I would also say some Gen Y. And really, I mean, everybody has, there are people in every group that has both. And there are always outliers. But just generally speaking, I always tailor stuff that's younger towards Instagram. And so when I got there, our Facebook was doing fine. You know, I think it's like over maybe like 2,000 followers or something on Facebook. Just because it's been around longer, I think. And the Instagram wasn't in a bad spot by any means, but it wasn't getting a ton of engagement or views. And so that was really that's been my focus. But it's also just because that's where I'm biased, because I'm a little younger and that's what I grew up with. The reason I brought that up is because with Facebook, what tends to do really well is videos or images of our founder. So, and the reason is because our founder is, I think, 80 something. And, you know, he started the ministry 50 years ago. And so a ton of his original supporters are still active with our account on Facebook. And so they share it like crazy and they love seeing him. And so there was one video that I didn't even make when I first got here that just took off. And I think it got like 4,000, somewhere in the range of 4,000 to 5,000 views. Which is unusual for us. That's the only one that's gone like viral, quote unquote viral. But, you know, we've had others do abnormally well, that's for sure, but not like not like that yet. So
how do you know when you've succeeded? Do you want to get more followers, more views, more donations? What do you want to do?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I mean, it depends obviously on the organization. But for us, my direct report boss has talked to me about is that we would really love to turn social media engagement and interaction into donor support, because we have a lot of supporters that are older, and that's great, and they have been so generous to us. I mean, I think Short Oaks has been a faithful supporter for like years and years and years. But yeah, so anyway, that's our goal, just because we want to have more younger supporters. And it's not even about like a dollar amount. It's just like getting people on board with what we're doing, just to kind of sustain the future of the ministry. So this is another thing. It's changed over the 6 months I've been there. At first it was just like, okay, I just want to get interaction and views. Anything I can get is great. And I'm just trying things and keep the best, ditch the rest. Like, you know what I mean? And so now I would say my goal is I would love to just keep growing our views personally, because that's how you get new people. Is, you know, if a reel takes off, I mean, I kid you not, sometimes 70% of the people that view one of our reels is non-followers. And so trying to like get into the feeds of people that don't follow us to kind of let them know that we exist. Because that's the thing, I've realized a ton of people, because we're so international focused that a lot of US people don't even know that we exist. And so that's kind of my personal goal, but not maybe the goal that I mean, I'm also pursuing the goal that my superiors have given to me, but you know, I just...
Smart man.
Yeah, that is how you... Yeah, anyway, welcome to having a job 101, right? But anyway, so that's kind of my personal goal. But I think in the first 6 months on Instagram, we had like from like August to November, we went from like 2,000 views a month to like 12,000 views a month, which was wild. And so a lot of that was not to do with me necessarily. It was just the things that were happening in the ministry that I was able to highlight. But so it's been really cool. And that was a really long answer to your very simple question, but I hope that was interesting in some respect.
It was. It sounds like it's a good use of your talent. You were restating a lot of it for the benefits of the listeners, which is good, but it's absolutely just objectively a good use of your talents, and God came through and gave you a good job. That's very Joe.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that. And I totally agree. It's really cool. And I feel like I've grown a lot in my eye and my ability to make artistic decisions, and just kind of learning how to like to trust my own voice in a lot of ways, you know? So it's been really cool, and I have loved it, and I feel like I'm getting better and better.
Joe, do you want to tell them the actual big news?
Yeah. I got engaged. So, thank you. Thank you. Yes. It's, you know, to all the people who said it would never happen.
All the haters from seventh grade and prove them wrong.
All the haters.
Take that.
Yeah. Freaking get out of here. No, but yeah, that was back in September. So it was a little while ago now, but yeah, engagement is awesome. That's a crazy story. I feel like I've been talking a lot. Is this okay that I like, this is probably going to be another like 5 to 10 minute like thing.
I mean, it's your podcast, Joe, go nuts.
Okay. It's my world. You're just living in it. That's what I'm hearing you say. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'll just mute and...
Yes. So got engaged. The story is this. Basically, so I moved to Missouri in August, but I knew that I wanted to propose in September because we were planning to come back for my birthday weekend. So then I had this conundrum, right? I'm like, okay, well, because I don't know if anybody's ever said this to you, Zachary, but planning an engagement is really hard, especially in today's culture where you want to surprise them but it's this impossible question, right? Because you're like, okay, I have to get them to a predetermined location where I look good, they look good, there's a photographer and it's like a pretty day in a nice space, right? That's the culture we live in. I mean, I've talked to like some older mentors of mine and they're like, yeah, I just asked my wife to marry me in my car or whatever, you know? It's like, that does not fly.
Well, back in your day, Grandpa, that might have flown, but this is 2026.
Yeah. When you, the car you bought for like $20 or whatever.
Is that before or after you bought the house for $50 and a basket of beans?
Exactly. So that's really hard in general. But then to do that from two states away, from 8 hours away from the place that you're trying to propose, it's like, oh my gosh. And then also trying to plan a post-engagement party, which not everybody does that. And not everybody does it this way, either way. So it's whatever. It's not like you have to. But I knew I wanted to because we had talked about it. The goal for me was I have to get her to a predetermined location where there's a photographer, where I know that she will like what she's wearing, like in photos later, and where I somehow also look nice and match her in some kind of an aesthetically pleasing way. I can't just be wearing a hoodie. You know what I mean? And so then it was like, okay, do I do it in Terre Haute? Do I do it in Bloomington? Like, I don't know. And then sort of our plan for the weekend, as it was crystallizing, I was like, okay, so we'll do it in Bloomington and then we'll go to my grandparents' house for a post-engagement party. And I tell you what, man, if it wasn't for the help of my future mother-in-law, so Lainey's mom and my mom, the post-engagement party would not have happened. It just was, I mean, and there were a lot of other people that helped too. I mean, some of Lauren's best friends and just a lot of people. And obviously, you know, my grandparents for hosting, but they had the cookies and the she said yes stuff. And I had nothing to do with it, man. Like they had food ready for, and you just
get to show up and look like a hero.
Literally. I told them we will be here at this time. I just want to have as many people there as we can to celebrate. And they said, okay. And they basically took it from there, which was a huge blessing. So the reason we were in Bloomington that day is we were touring wedding venues. So we were looking at wedding venues and I had convinced her that I hadn't even bought the ring yet. You know, that I was like still saving for the ring. And meanwhile, we're going to these wedding venues and on these tours with our parents and my parents were there for one of them. But, you know, these people are asking, oh, like how long you've been engaged? Like when's the wedding date? And we're going, well, we're not engaged yet. And we don't, you know, we want to get married on the, you know, the 14th or whatever, you know? And so I could tell that it was like getting her down and I was like, man, this is going to make it so freaking good. and so we got done with the last one and we were driving, I knew we were going to be eventually getting to my grandparents for the after party. She did not know that. She thought I was taking her back to her car and she's going to go to Terre Haute that night. But I strategically drove us near campus and I was like, I milked it, man. I was like, hey, like we're in home for the weekend. Like, can we like, we're right by campus. Can we stop? You know, and unbeknownst to her, I had planned for my future sister-in-law, Mallory, to be there in a very predetermined spot with a camera where like literally she had gotten on the phone with me like three different times on FaceTime trying to tell me where I was, like where I needed to be and where she was going to be. And like, I had to get it exactly right. Right. So I'm like nervous, sweating bullets. And I play it up like it was like an accident that we were so close to campus. But anyway, so we parked and she even, when I brought it up, she was like, really? Like, I don't like, and you know, it'd been a long day. And I was like, come on, like my birthday's tomorrow. Like I haven't seen campus in like a month or whatever. And so she said yes. And she was sweet about it, obviously, but I just thought it was funny because I was like, we are going to campus, like in my head, you know, like, yeah. So, because I knew that Mallory was in the woods, you know, waiting. So anyway, so we parked and I led her, you know, to the spot. And it was actually the spot where I asked her to be my girlfriend. And so when we got to the spot, right, I was so nervous and I don't know why, cause I knew she was going to say yes, but I was nervous. I was going to say something wrong or dumb or whatever. And I got to the spot and I stopped her and I said, I was like, man, like I was talking to her about like how this is the spot where, you know, we got in, or started dating, and then I was trying to like play up to the moment, you know. And in the middle of that, you know, Mallory's on our right, or my right, her left, because she's looking at me and all that. But she looks directly in Mallory's direction. I'm going, there's no way that she didn't see Mallory just now. And my brother Jack was also there, who has been on the show. Has he been on this show, or was that just?
He was on the long show that got memory hold. We don't need to talk about the other show.
Yes.
But that definitely never happened. But
yeah.
With, and just a clarification for the listeners as well. Mallory is not Lainey's sister, which you might think when you hear sister-in-law. Instead, Mallory is an unrelated third-party person who is marrying Jack, who is the brother of Joe. So it's the other meaning of sister-in-law. Just in case people get confused. And back to the story.
Yes, thank you. That was good. That was good. So I thought for sure the jig was up, like she had seen Mallory. So I just keep going. I'm just like committed to this. It's like, I can't change it now, you know? And so I like, and again, like I said, she didn't think I was going to propose to like Thanksgiving at the earliest. And so when I got down on one knee, she thought I was messing with her because I had done that in the past. And then I actually pulled out the ring and I was like, hey, like I thought I'd just try and speed it up and, you know, will you marry me? And shocker, she said yes. So
would have been pretty awkward if she said no, but at least Mallory was lying in wait and got some good pictures.
And it was funny too, right? Because I mean, obviously there's a ton of emotion there, and we hugged, and it was such a sweet moment. But she was like, "You lied to me." I was like, "Yeah," like right through my teeth for like 2 months, and she was like, I'll let it slide, but you're never allowed to do that again. And I was like, I don't ever want to, because I had to lie so much. It was so difficult to actually get that planned. But it was good. It all went to plan, and we got the photos, and she looked great, and I looked. Yeah, there was a million things, man.
Did it feel like a 1 million ton weight was lifted off your shoulder? No more secrets and all the rest?
1,000,000%. Yes. It was the best feeling ever. Cause then it was like, okay, well now we can like plan together the wedding. You know what I mean? It's not like, yeah. So yeah, man, there was a million things that happened that, you know, anybody from the outside would say, man, I can't believe you guys actually pulled that off and got engaged, you know, but we did it. And, I think the Lord gave us favor. So, I'll take it, right? So I'm excited. I'm engaged. We're engaged. Gosh, we got to have her on the show, man.
I mean, it's a big step. I mean,
that is,
let's not go too good.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah.
No, that'd be fun. I would love to. Because I don't know her super well. I've really only met her once or twice.
Which is so crazy, man.
Which is wild. It's this asymmetric thing because she's a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
And we are a decent part of each other's life. But yet here we are. And
yeah.
I don't know really much about her.
Yeah, which is why it's just the part, like doing long distance, man. That's like the worst part probably. Well, maybe second worst part, but definitely up there. I mean, it just sucks.
Can you say the worst part on the show? Or?
Oh yeah. I mean, the worst part is being apart from each other. That sucks. But then, I mean, yeah, just the fact that you can't, you can really try. And with family, we did, you know, she tried to be close to my family and I tried to be close to her family, which was easier, but then friends are so difficult, man. Cause it's like, you know, yeah, it's like half, basically all of our time together when we were long distance was already not that much. And when we did have it, it was like, you know, we somehow have to split this between spending time with her people, spending time with my people, and just having actual time with each other. And then of course, when we're with my people, that gets however chopped up into the million different family members that I have. And then it's like, how much time is left for friends? Like, you know, it's just a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. So that was super, super difficult. Would not recommend long distance unless you really, really love the person. or at least just want to give it a shot. But anyway, nobody asked for my opinion on that. So there you go. I am going to stop talking. Here's my question for you, Zachary. Given everything that I have ever said about long distance, would you ever attempt long distance as a relationship?
With the right person, anything is possible. However, it would not be my favorite.
That's a good answer. That's a wise answer.
I mean, you two will always have a special place in my heart because on my Aura picture frame, not sponsored, you are on two of the pictures and you scroll past and I see your faces as we surprise you at the house that we went to, location undisclosed, to surprise you. And I don't think you were maybe that surprised. You might have suspected. But that was a time that I sort of lied through. Well, I didn't lie through my teeth, but I did mislead you about it was like, you were like, has anyone planned anything to like, I don't remember what the exact wording was, but it was like, has anyone planned anything like a party for you guys, you know, back home to celebrate you getting engaged? And I was like, yeah, I haven't heard anything. And the truth is I hadn't heard anything. I got a text, had not heard anything, but I read with my eyes a text that we were to show up and yell, surprise. So although it was a little bit of a moral stretch, don't tell Chidi from The Good Place or any moral philosophy professors. So kind of an ethical dilemma there, but I think you were somewhat surprised. And so I see your picture and your faces look surprised. And Lainey's doesn't look surprised. She's like all knowing and she'd been on from the beginning, but we were trying to surprise you.
Yeah. I think it was like engagement plus like kind of going away, you know, just cause we were both heading to Missouri, pretty soon. So I think it was like a both and, but yeah, dude, that's sweet. So for the listeners, Zachary gifted me a Aura frame, which is just one of the digital picture frames that shows different pictures at different time intervals. But I have it in my office actually, and it's super fun. I love seeing all the photos. But what's really funny is that, and I love them. And I think Zachary, I've told you this, but just I think it's a funny anecdote that Zachary put in photos of us when we were like in middle school. So it's in my workplace. So,
oh yeah. That created some interesting discussions.
Yeah. There's been more than one occasion where a coworker or even like my boss has come in and it's like a picture of me when I was like, like 11 or something, you know, or 12. And, but either way, I mean, I'm not gonna get rid of those photos. I love those photos, but it just, every time they come up, it kind of makes me smile. But yeah, it's a good gift. I would highly recommend that gift. Did somebody get you that as a gift and that's why you get it for, or got it for me or?
Quite the opposite. I bought it myself because I really wanted one.
Oh, okay.
And then I bought someone for their birthday. And then I bought it for someone else for their birthday. And I bought it for you for your birthday. And yeah, it's good. If you buy it from Sam's Club, not sponsored, it only costs $100. I'll limit 3 per membership card, I think, but there are ways to get a slight discount.
I need to get one for my grandparent or just, yeah, both sets of grandparents. That would be a good gift, I feel like.
Everyone I bought it for has loved it, like said amazing things about it. And it's like, man, what do you get for the person who has everything?
Yeah.
Apparently that. And then and then it's not just cool to be cool because you also preload your own pictures of, you know, stuff that when they open it in the box, it's already there. You know, they connect to Wi-Fi and it's already there for them. And then it's super easy to use. You just scan the QR code on the box and preload the photos you need to preload. And then you let them put on their own photos as well. So it's kind of fun.
That is, so you did that, like, so you ordered it, got the box, then did that, and then gave it to me?
It's designed to where you unwrap the plastic, and then you have to actually unwrap it to get to the QR code. Obviously, you can't just be in the store preloading weird stuff on there. But you unwrap the plastic, you peel back a little layer of paper, you scan the QR code, and then you can kind of put the paper back, and it doesn't really look like anything happened. What I did for my boss is I got him a frame, and then I sent a special link to all of his family members. And then I put in like 10 or 12 photos of like us as coworkers, you know, doing stuff at the office and different pictures I knew he would like of us. And then and then it's like, oh, he'll see these all the time, right? One of his children comes in. No, I don't want to say too much, but an unnamed member of his family came in and put 2,500 photos on the Aura frame.
Are you kidding me?
And I got the notification that censored name here, put 2,500 photos on the frame.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, well, I guess those 12 that I put in are buried. And then his wife came in and I think put either like 2,000 or very close of her own on there. And I'm like, well, I guess you will never see the one of me and you in the car. Driving down.
Never.
And we see it every now and then, but it's pretty darn buried in there. So kind of got diluted, but.
Wow.
It apparently went over pretty well.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a really good gift, actually.
So feel free to steal that idea. I mean, some people are so hard to shop for. It's like they have all the clothing they want and.
Yes.
Man, you just buy everything for yourself. That's what my family is. They buy everything for themselves on the Amazon Prime, beep, beep. Jeff Bezos brings it right to us. And it's like, well, What am I supposed to do? I can't get you anything.
I think it's a great gift. Keeping memories is really hard, you know, in a digital world anyway. And so it kind of leans into it, but it's also really sweet because you can still see. I don't know. It's just a really good gift. It's just a really good gift.
So much we could talk about here. I'll briefly say, just for a memory time capsule thing, we are in the thick of winter. We've done a few podcasts in the super thick winter. And I remember one time you described it as the cold, so cold, it's trying to kill you. It's one thing. Oh, it's cold. It's 30 degrees. And then it's another thing that's cold where it's at zero, negative 10 with the wind chill. It's like, that's a little different where it does feel like the cold is getting in your bones and trying to take away all of your life. You know, it's a little different because I think in the summer, it does feel like the heat is exhausting or whatever, but you can kind of either go in the shade or get a little bit of a break or whatever. And then the cold, there's not really much of a break from it as well with the dry air. But I like winter better than summer, no question about it. But it was funny because during December, I was like, wow, this is a really mild winter. Like it's between 30 and 40 degrees, at least here in Bloomington. And it's never colder than 30. It doesn't really, maybe every now and then, but it doesn't really dip below 20. And then that's fine. It's like an ugly version of autumn, right? It's 20, 30 or 40 degrees. There's no beautiful colors and everything is fine. And then mid-January, it's like we got the great snowstorm across the United States. Everyone is like, oh my gosh, you know, from coast to coast, you can hear the people exclaiming as they are covered in snow. And so we did get a day of very thick snow, and then we unburied all the cars and the snowplow kind of reburied some stuff. But what you gonna do? So I don't know, how did that go in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, no, I agree. Things are sometimes a little bit more mild here. Yeah, I'm not that far from Bloomington, but I'm a little bit further south, I think on the globe, I guess technically speaking. So things tend to be a little bit more mild, but the wind is what's killer here, because there are some hills in this area, but not a ton like Bloomington is. And so when the wind picks up, it picks up. And so, the wind chill is really what's killer. I mean, we got a lot of snow. I think we got like my guess would be like 6 or 7 inches.
Oh no, Joe, not, no. The Great Reset, we have to leave that in the past. We have to leave that in the past, Joe. Don't do this to the people, Joe.
Yeah. Listen, man. I mean, I hanging out with middle schoolers, you know, on a weekly basis at church, that it gets to you. It gets to you. And then you start to see it everywhere. It's like
you do your pattern recognition, because it's two numbers in sequence, and suddenly every single person in the world is saying that like 6 or 7 times a day. And then you're like, is there no respite from the 6, 7?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, there isn't. And then you have to embrace it, where you just have to like,
yep, exactly.
If you can't beat them, join them. So like with the high schoolers and middle schoolers, you're like, well, time to be the most uncool leader that there's ever been. And you just have to embrace it until they beg you to stop. And then it's like an Uno reverse card.
Yeah, that's actually a really solid point, actually. Anyway, there really were like 6 to 7 inches here, maybe 8. Definitely cold. And I think what was interesting was we actually got, I don't know if it was like this in Bloomington, but we had like the first week of January, like it sometimes got up to 70 degrees here. Was it like that in Bloomington?
It wasn't quite 70 degrees, but there were a few weird days that were 50, and there was one or two days that were 60. And it was like, this is just very weird for winter. I think even Christmas Day was unseasonably warm.
Yes, I do. I was in Bloomington for that. And I do remember that felt really strange that it was so warm on Christmas Day. But yeah, man, I love you, but I will never understand why winter is your favorite season. But feel free to explain, you know, to everyone listening.
No, I've explained it. I hate being hot. It like makes me anxious and is like, it feels like you can't escape and you're just sweating and it's humid and you can't get a break. And I just hate being hot so much that winter becomes, I mean, fall is actually my favorite season. It's not, you know, I've never said winter's my favorite. I say I like it. If I had to rank it, fall is the best, then spring, then winter, then summer. Because the mild ones are obviously the better ones. But and the other thing with summer in a college town is it's also just boring because everyone leaves and there's literally nothing to do.
That's
like
true.
A ghost town, and like no one is around, and it's like fun because the students aren't there and you can go to the restaurants again. But it's also not fun because a bunch of people are just like traveling and there's no one to talk to, and it does get lonely, but it may be self-inflicted.
No, that's a good point. I think I just like, just this is maybe, I don't know, if you think this is gross, you can cut it out. But like, I just feel like in the winter, it's just like perpetual, like my feet are just perpetually cold, you know? Like,
No, that's not gross. That's you need to get better socks, Joe. I mean, is that what you need? Is this for your birthday? Is that what you need, better socks, or what is this? I think this is a sock problem. I think we can get you a better sock. And what are your current socks? Tell me about your current socks.
Well, I have Under Armour. I think they're cotton socks. Athletic socks really are bad.
That's not going to do the job, Joe. We need something. You need to get something better than that.
Okay. What would you recommend?
I mean, I'm wearing I think they're like from Sam's Club or whatever, but I'm wearing the Omniwool tactical socks. I'm looking at the website. Your foot's first line of defense. Ignoring the tactical branding, it is very warm. And I can try to find the exact brand I have. I think it's,
what's it called?
I think it's Omniwool. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, here it is. I think this is it. Yeah, I think they carry it at maybe Sam's Club, and maybe they are wool. And I think they carry them at either Sam's Club or possibly Costco. But we can get some of these for you here, Joe, because they are very warm. And yeah, you will not have any difficulties.
Okay. Well, if they're at Sam's Club, I do have a Sam's Club membership, so maybe I should just go check that out. That sounds cool. So you sound like a radio show. You're like a radio talk show. You're like, well, we can fix that for you. We'll get these sent out to you right away.
if you act today for only $5.99, you will get a I don't know, what are you throwing free with the socks? You'll get a free pair of Underwool underwear. There it is. Perfect.
Yeah, there you go. No, there you go.
I don't want to say too much, and we can maybe cut this all off. I don't want to say too much, but if you up your sock and underwear game, life will get better. I don't want to say too much, but that's all I'm gonna say.
Interesting. All right, fair enough.
But yeah, that we can solve that problem for you, Joe. What other problems did you help solve for you?
Let me just fix everything about your life real quick.
Yeah, because I also like, the other thing is like, if you dress appropriately, you really aren't cold. Like you have like base layer clothing, different stuff, you know, different. If you have the right socks, the right base layer, you really don't have to be cold. You're fine. But then summer, there's just nothing you can do. It's like short sleeves and shorts and just like, I'm sweating my butt off and there's nothing I can do.
That is a good point. And, you know, by the end of summer, usually I'm like, yeah, I think I'm ready for fall.
Oh, man, that first week of fall where it's like 50, it's like literally going to heaven. It's like, this is the best thing.
Well, yes, I think I like spring the most because it's getting warm with the anticipation of summer, you know, whereas I think it's spring. Honestly, it's in succession. I think it's spring, summer, fall, and winter is my favorite in order.
Oh, why fall so low, Joe?
Well, because I like fall because it's like spring, but fall points to winter, and winter makes me sad because the sun is out less and it's cold. Yeah. So it's like spring is the best in my opinion because it points to the thing that I like the most, which is summer. But it's like a piece of summer, but so it's like awesome. Like May is probably my favorite month, if I'm being honest with you, just because it's like, by the third week of May, you're like, oh my gosh, it's beautiful outside. It smells great, but there's no bugs yet. And it's not like sweltering, you know?
I love October. I love, love, love October. It's amazing.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool. I do. Yeah. October's cool. Anyway, I'm curious. So if fall, you know, if fall is your favorite season, it's kind of a cozy season. So this past fall, did you read any good books? Did you?
Oh my gosh. Again, with the transitions.
Dude, that was a 10 out of 10 segue.
10 out of 10. So good.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honestly, I was unhappy with the amount of books I read. I just feel like, you know, not that it has to be a numbers game, but here I am making it a numbers game. It just felt like I was not reading the amount I wanted to read. Partially because I was playing a couple of video games. It took a lot of my time. And what's funny is I have a love-hate relationship with video games because on one hand, I'm like, they're kind of a waste of time. But then on the other hand, it's like, enjoy your life. If there's a good game, just play it. And so kind of the two real briefly are Hollow Knight Silksong. Many years ago, me and you talked about Hollow Knight, the original one. Mm-hmm. And then here we are with the sequel 6 or 7 years later of Silksong. And it's really good. No spoilers. It's very hard, very difficult to play. I was so frustrated. You know the cliche where you like, you're struggling with the game, so you like metaphorically have that older brother figure and you hand the controller to him and like, beat this for me. I don't know. I didn't have an older brother. So maybe for you with older brothers, that's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, it was the opposite. It was my younger brother who's way better every game he ever plays than me. And it's just infuriating. And like, he can, don't get me started, but Owen can beat me in Mario Kart. Almost no one can beat me in Mario Kart. And he like beats me almost every time. And I'm just like, this is so infuriating. Like I didn't even make any mistakes and you just somehow still, like I drove perfectly and like everything. And then you somehow just are immediately passing me and there's nothing I can do. So
crazy.
Anyway, wow. He's very good. And so there was a one time where I like got so tilted that I was like, I'm going to quit this game forever and never return if Owen does not beat this boss for me. The original Hollow Knight, I enjoy exploring the most in the original. So the bosses are fun, but it's just fun to me, like go around and find different rooms and whatever. This game, there's some exploring, but every now and then there's just like a wall. Like you have to beat this boss or you can't go anywhere else. Like the rest of the world is beyond this room and you need to beat this boss. You're welcome to go around in the starting area or where you were and look for stuff to make it easier, like gadgets or tools or whatever. But you literally cannot do a single thing until you beat this boss. So, but then I'm like, I don't want to beat this boss. Like it keeps killing me. And then I have to walk all the way back because the bench is so far. Like, don't get me started on the walk backs. Anyway, so I was like, I had beaten this really hard boss. And then I was like, so tilted, so to speak, that I was like, Owen, I'm going to give up on this game. Please beat this boss for me. And he's like, trust me, the game gets really good. It's like that one friend. Trust me, the anime gets good after season 43. It's like, no, trust me, you got to beat this boss. You'll love the game after. I was like, all right, fine. And then but he beat the boss for me. And then I enjoyed the game more after that because it opened up. There's a lot more I could do. And there was one boss called Widow that was pretty tough. And I spent like, I want to say like a couple hours trying to beat it with like Owen coaching me through it. But I eventually got it. And then so the fun part is, and it's like this with the original Hollow Knight, but basically your character becomes so powerful that you just pick up so many different tools and equipment and you have so much health compared to how you used to. And, you know, you have all these insane tools that just like shred through anything that gets near you and like you fully upgrade your weapons. And I basically went back. There's this one optional boss that like I could not beat for anything. And I just gave up and was just annoyed. And again, you don't have to beat it. It just like it unlocks something, but you can progress without it. So I just went back after like I was almost done with the game and just shredded that boss to pieces because I like just came in guns blazing with like the most intense equipment you've ever seen and just like killed it instantly. So I was like, that felt kind of good. But then there were a couple, you know, the final boss, I did beat that. And then I went and played for a while and then I beat the final boss that's actually the final boss. And then that was also very difficult. But And again, it was hard because it's like, I'm coming in with the most powerful stuff in the game. And the final boss is still killing me over and over and over. At least they put the bench close.
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers. All that to say, Joe, it's a big time commitment. If you ever have a lot of free time, go for it. Hollow Knight Silksong on Switch, Steam, whatever. But it's a lot harder than the original. I think they almost wanted Team Cherry, the people that made it, almost wanted to make it harder. They were like, you thought you were going to just sail through because you were so good at the original. Well, there's a lot more complexity in this one. And Hornet, the main character, is just so much faster than the Knight. So the areas are way bigger and she's more nimble and all the enemies are faster and can do more damage and whatever. So that was fun. Balatro, the card game that I tried to show you one time and maybe you didn't really understand, is still really fun. But basically I scored I did this twice. I basically scored something called Nan Inf, which is an unlimited amount of points in the game, like an unlimited amount for the blind. So that's the most points you can score, is infinite points, like so much that the game says Nan Inf, which means you have an infinite amount of points. It's actually a bug. But it's like, once you do that, there's a very specific way to do it. You need very specific jokers and a very specific setup, and there's a whole system to doing it. Really good players can consistently like just boot up the game and do it. I had to kind of get lucky on a couple of things, just like getting the right jokers at the right time. But I did that once, and I did it again. And then I was like, okay, well, that's kind of just about all there that I want to do in this game. You can't play like something called Gold Stake, where it's just really hard, and you're working on no money and no points and this blind scaling is really fast and you just die all the time. And that doesn't sound fun. I want to be like really powerful and have tons of money and jokers, like plenty to work with. So I only play on pretty much the White Stake Plasma deck for those who know, but yeah, that's a fun game and can easily eat a lot of time. So looking back, those ate up a bunch of time and I wouldn't say I regret it because it was super fun, but I didn't quite get into as much reading as I might've liked. Some of these were good. Some of them were better than others. I enjoyed, I read a book about Sully, which is by, you know, the Captain Sully who crash landed / emergency landed in the Hudson. There was a movie about it starring Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah.
The movie tried to make it more dramatic than it was. They tried to be like, oh, the government agencies were like upset at him and like thought that he would like done something wrong or whatever. And then the real captain watched the movie, is like, yeah, that's not really what happened. They're just trying to add some drama for Hollywood.
Really?
But anyway, that was interesting. And he's just a very like boring, kind of a boring guy. He's like the guy you want flying your plane. He's just like, nothing really bothers him. And he's like,
cool.
Yeah, I wasn't really worried because I knew we could land safely. And it's like, dude, both your engines went out and you're quote unquote not really worried because you quote unquote knew you could land safely. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was wild. So he's a good guy there. That was good. Read a couple other series here. Your Christianity, reread that. That's mm-hmm. always good. A couple of good books. The Art of Spending Money by Morgan Housel.
Oh, yeah.
You may have heard of it. It sort of was popular. I really like that. Would highly recommend. There's a few others, but those are some of the highlights there. It was a lot of rereading some different things.
Yeah.
And then Holy Bible. I did finish that as of December. Did read the whole Bible in a year.
Hey.
My goal was to do it, and I did indeed do it.
Nice.
Some of it was, because my goal is to read and understand, and I think there's parts of the Bible I may never fully understand, but I feel like I understand, like a lot of mm-hmm. deep prophecy, getting deep in Isaiah and Jeremiah just gets very, very complicated. Mm. But I feel like I understood more of it than I ever have, so that counts for something.
That's great.
So I didn't die in Leviticus, but I didn't start fresh-faced in January, and then in February, die in Leviticus. That's not what's happening, so I'm on a trek. And really, all you have to do is read 3 or 4 chapters a day, and you got the whole thing done in a year, no problem. Mm-hmm. So if you can read and understand 3 or 4 chapters a day and not get behind to where you have to read 85 chapters in March, it's like, then you're doing fine.
Yeah.
It's like a triumphant thing here where the last line is the Holy Bible on my reading list for 2025. It's like, haha, I did it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great, man. Good for you.
As of this year, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, I read that. That was pretty good. I like Habit 7, sharpen the saw. That's a good habit. Like to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's kind of long-winded, but I enjoyed it. Another good one was Put First Things First, where this is kind of one of those things where he sort of milks the author Stephen Covey. He's well known, obviously, but he sort of milks the habits. And then he wrote a book called like The 8th Habit. It's like, come on, it's just a money grab. Like, what are we doing here? But I really like the habit that talks about putting first things first. So putting first things first is where you have to decide what's urgent and important, which is the stuff that's kind of in your face. But then the subtle category is what's important but not urgent. And so I was actually thinking about stuff in my own life, like an example, hypothetical example based on my industry, like get life insurance. That is probably important for sure. That's important to have that protection in place. Is it urgent and in your face and oh my gosh, you've got to do it now? No, it's just like quiet and in the background. And you know, there's all these things that are important that you absolutely should do, and probably bad things will happen if you don't do them. Are they urgent and in your face and yelling at you like other stuff? No. There's also stuff that's urgent and not important. That's like calls that waste your time and other things, you know, that are definitely not a good use of your time, but they're in your face and you feel like you have to swat them away and deal with them. Worst of all is not important and not urgent, which should just be instantly deleted. So that was good. That was like Eisenhower's Matrix kind of there. Before Bed, Don't Laugh, I'm reading Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder, a book series that I absolutely hated when I was a kid. I think it was because I liked The Boxcar Children better, and you know, it felt like I had to read those, and then I couldn't read The Boxcar Children books as much as I wanted to. But anyway, those are just basically designed to put me to sleep, so they're great before bed. It's like, you know, and some of it's stressful because it's like, oh, we're out of food and the long winter is going to kill us all and baby Carrie has smallpox. And sometimes it gets a little upsetting there. Most of the time it's just relaxing and slow paced, and we spend the whole day churning butter, and before long I'm asleep by page 2. Lastly, I will shout out, there's some others here, but lastly, I'll shout out Choosing to Cheat, a very inflammatory title by Andy Stanley. It's not talking about cheating on your spouse, Joe, don't worry. It's talking about the balance between work and life. And so it's basically saying if you've got to cheat either on your family by working way too much or on your work by drawing hard boundaries and going home to your family, you've got to choose work every time.
Dang, man, that's good.
It was a short and snappy read. It was really punchy. It was good. And he basically said everyone on their deathbed is happy that they spent time with their family and doesn't say they wish they worked more. And so he basically talks about know how much you're hired to do, you know, not slack off, but don't let your work take over your entire life and take away from, he gave me, you know, examples of, I'm sure names were changed for innocence, but examples of, you know, marriages that failed because the other spouse was upset that one of them, doesn't even have to be a man versus woman thing, but the other spouse spent too much time at work and the spouse that was left behind got upset. And then versus the other was not true. There was never, oh, you're spending too much time, you know, why don't you go work? You're spending too much time being too attentive. And it's like, you know, you got to make these hard decisions. So part of life, I think, is discovering there's not always the amount of time or energy you would want to get all of your goals done. So you kind of just have to pick and choose, which is frustrating, but we're humans and we're limited. So that's how it goes.
Yeah. Dude, wow, that sounds like a great, and he's a Christian, right, Andy Stanley?
Yeah, yeah, he is a very well-known pastor, author, speaker, all the rest. He's got a leadership podcast. His stuff is very solid. I remember I listened to this one sermon series by him a long time ago. I still remember it to this day, interestingly. It was about guardrails, and it was basically like, when it comes to sin, we need to like put up guardrails. Like, well, because if you think about it, guardrails on the road are like a few feet away from the cliff, basically. He basically says in our life, we need to set up guardrails like a few feet away from sin. Not like, you know, to where you're actively sinning and then you hit the guardrail, but like it stops you way before. So he gave some examples of that. So he's just has a way with words. Mm. I like him.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. That sounds like a good book. I might have to put that on my shelf and then not read it for a couple of years and then read it.
Oh man. One of these days, surely one of these days you'll read all of these books that you are always talking about. Surely.
One of these days. Yep. Well, I am really making an effort. I think I need to get one of those. Do you have like one of those apps that you use where you track the books or?
I mean, my app is Google Sheets, so no.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. No.
The classic no, yes, Midwestern answer. Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's, I really feel like that might help because I tend to like start a lot of books and then forget which ones are actually important for me to finish, you know, like, like for instance, like I'm doing, part of my premarital counseling is, reading The Meaning of Marriage. And it's like, I just sort of forget that I needed, like, that's an actual like assignment that I need to do, you know? And then I'll start reading something else and then I'll be like, oh shoot, I have to read, you know, and then I'll go back and then I'll forget the other thing. And then it's just, yeah. So
Joe, we can also solve this problem for you. We can make you a nice Google sheet that shows what's being read. I have a nice little section. This is what's finished. This is what's being read. This is what I gave up on. And this is what's next. Super simple.
Hey, if you want to send me that my way and I can copy it and make my own. And that might be really helpful actually. And maybe then my habits would change if I just have the right Google sheet.
That will surely solve my problem. The right Google sheet will surely solve all my life's problems. Surely.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's just a glorified list there. But I mean, some people I think have had good experience with is it Goodreads? And some people like the social aspect and, oh, Goodreads wrapped at end of the year. I read 53 books. Good for me. And I don't really care because it's just my own like internal systems. But I know people that works well for and they like, because it's also a good way to discover books. Like it'll recommend with your friends or whatever, this person recommends you read this. And also, Joe, there's no shame in like, if you're not enjoying the book, like just don't finish it basically. But if you're enjoying it and then forgetting it exists, yeah, then, yeah, got to go back to it. What are you reading, Joe?
I don't have a list, although I probably should. I know that, I mean, the Bible is one for me that I just have wanted to read all the way through for forever. And so I started it in a Bible that I had a while ago, and then got a new Bible like 2023 and started reading it. And I'm still like, I think I'm in, it's funny too, cause I read multiple things at a time, as you know. So, I'm currently in Isaiah. So I feel you on that part. I mean, some of it, and as I do research and stuff, it helps, you know, but it's just so difficult sometimes to actually get my brain around what he's saying, you know? But yeah, so I'm in Isaiah now. So, I mean, I spent all of last year kind of studying Mark, which was really, really good. And just taking it really, really slow through, cause you read through so many, you know, you read through the Gospels and it's like, I don't know, you catch the big stuff, but then I think this was maybe my third or fourth time reading the Gospel. And I was just like, wow, like there's just so many things I don't notice if I'm reading too fast. And so that was really, really good. I'm trying to spend this year in John, but you know, we'll see how that goes. I've got a little commentary that I'm trying to walk through it with, but yeah, other than that, I mean, I think I read a portion of the Bible in 2025. I did not finish it. My goal is to finish the Bible this year.
Yeah. What books are left?
Well, I'm also reading Jeremiah at the same time I'm reading Isaiah, and I'm probably like,
don't you dare.
I was about to say 60-70% through, but it's literally true. I'm like probably 65% of the way through. Both of them. And so just trying to finish those up, then do Ezekiel. And then I believe all that's left after that is like Lamentations and then all the minor prophets. So, which I think there are 12, not a ton left. I think I've read all of the New Testament other than maybe like 3 John or something. And I might need to revisit Hebrews, but I know I've read them before. So I think really my main thing here is the prophets is what's hanging me up and killing me. Job took forever. That was 2025. Definitely did that 2025. It's been a really good journey. And I think, I don't know. I just, as I more and more put together the story of the Bible, it just like, it makes so much sense to me why as a kid I didn't care. Because I just didn't know. It was like, you maybe start in Genesis and then you're like, oh, I know these things. So you just kind of like zip past the rest of it and then like read a couple of verses in Romans and you're like, yeah, the gospel, cool.
Great, good job.
It's like you just get nothing like the grand story arc of the Bible that all, I mean, to use a Bible Project lingo, I mean, it's a unified story that points to Jesus. And so it's like everything pre-Jesus is the story of how we got there. And then everything post-Jesus is everything that has changed because of him. And it's just like, when you see it that way, it's like, wow, like Isaiah is all pointing. I mean, it's that the suffering servant for like 10 chapters is him, you know? And then there's some passages where it's like, what are you on, Isaiah? Like the Holy Spirit, obviously, but like, I just am not the man to understand what's going on here. But it's good, man. It's really good. So I'd say that's like my major thing right now. So far this year, I read a tiny little book by Tim Keller called The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. This Tim Keller book, tiny. I mean, you could read it probably in less than an hour easily. But it basically talks about how, actually, Mere Christianity, right? He has that whole chapter on pride, about how pride is the great sin. And so Tim Keller just, it's this little book about how Paul looks at selflessness. And I think that's where the quote that every pastor and his mother quotes about, you know, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. I think he says that in the book, but it's not a quote. So I'm like, I think that he said that first. But yeah, basically, it's all about how Paul views himself and how he relates to God and how he relates to other people. And like, to give you the 30-second version, it's like, Paul's basically like, listen, like, I'm not judged by humans, so I don't really care what you think. But then he's also like, I don't care what I think either, because it doesn't matter what I think, because the only person that's judging me that actually matters is God. And I'm going to stand before him, and that's all that matters. So it's not like I'm downplaying my sin, or it's not like I'm downplaying what I'm doing every day, but it's like, on a very real note, Paul, I think it's in 2 Corinthians is the passage he works out of for the little duration of the book. But he basically is just like, yeah, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks of me, including myself, because God is the one that judges. So it's sort of again, the title is The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. So it's really, really good. I would highly recommend it. And then last year, I did just remember, I read a book called Walking Her Home. Basically, it's like a longer view of just relationship and what marriage should look like. And it was really good. It was really short too. Probably could read that in an hour or less if you wanted to. But yeah, just talked about the process. And it was kind of a story being told also of like the boy, you know, knocks on the door and says to the dad, you know, can I take your daughter out? And it's comparing that to how men should, you know, be reverent before the Lord about how this is his daughter and I'm walking his daughter home, you know, through life as an example, right?
Do you remember the author?
So it's written by a local guy here in Joplin. It's Chad Adams is his name. Walking Her Home, and then the subtitle is A Wake Up Call for Men Who Know That There's More. And so, yeah, and then the other little subtitle is One of You Will Walk the Other Home. The only question is, will you be ready? So super, super quick read. But just talking about kind of from, you know, from dating all the way to death, you know, how do you walk a daughter of God home to be back with her father? And so, it was really good. It was convicting. It was kind of definitely sort of a wake up call. That's been really good. And then I kind of mentioned it before, but working through Meaning of Marriage, The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller also. And that's just phenomenal. yeah, couple of books. I'm sure I'll remember another maybe that I read later, but I feel like 2025 could have been like 2 years, you know, like there was just so many things that happened for me that last year. So, but yeah, I'm going to add a couple of years to my list though, for sure.
That's good. Good year of reading here. Anything else you're learning about trying to pursue? I actually will go first here, but I've enjoyed drumming. I've kind of taken a bit of a long break from drumming in 2025, but then I got in the mood to go play some more and had fun. And it felt like almost when I was getting started where I just played a different songs on Spotify for like 2.5 hours and probably drive the neighbors insane. But it was like, yeah, this is great. Let's go. And then come back for another 2 hours, half hours later. But it was super fun. And I got a Zoom H6 recorder as well, so I can basically route my headphones, because the problem with my headphones is they are designed, well, they're technically in-ear monitors, but I'm calling them headphones. They're designed to block out, I don't remember if it's 30 decibels, they block out so much noise because it's drums, but then you almost can't hear, if you can't hear yourself as a musician, you don't know if you sound okay, which is the classic singer, oh, can I get more of me in the monitor? Oh, can I get more of me in the monitor? No matter what you do, they want more of me in the monitor, and it's like, wow, mm-hmm. Look at this egotistical singer. But it's like, if they can't hear themselves, they might be, they're not on track with the band rhythmically, or they're on the wrong key or whatever. So basically I want it to be all blocked out, but I want to pipe in just enough to make sure it sounds okay and it goes along with what it should be. And then I have a different input on the Zoom H6 that plays the music, and then I can record it and play it back and see how I did. You know, I don't want to say I've maxed out my talent ability at drums. I'm sure I can get a little better, but you know, I'm also exploring a little more with piano, and that's always been hard because I've never wanted to like actually work hard at piano and learn. I've always wanted to tinker around and I have actually been messing around more with songwriting too. I've made a couple of songs that I'm more proud of, and I can usually make some good loops, but then the question is, does it actually lead to a song? And it feels like my songwriting skills have gotten a little better. So even though I can't always put a name to the music theory that's being used, I can usually hear what I want it to sound like and assemble it and get it to sound right through a lot of tinkering and edits. And, you know, I'm cheating to some extent because I can go in on the MIDI track and decide where every single note is and, you know, manually draw in tons of notes. And it's not like I'm sitting there and playing it in one try, but, you know, it's been a fun thing to get lost in some songwriting as well.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun. I feel like you downplay your ability to play piano. Honestly, you're very, very talented for never. I mean, you maybe took a little lessons, and obviously your dad is.
I took like a year of lessons with my dad to learn the very basics. Yeah. And I do need, and like, this is my version of Joe's thing where it's like, realistically, it's not a priority, so it won't get done for a long time, if ever, but I need to work hard at piano. And I need to take lessons, and maybe I will, because I also took like some online lessons that taught me more jazz chords and stuff. But then it turned into me just drawing the jazz chords in Logic, not actually really knowing how to play them.
That's funny.
But it did improve my songwriting, but I just like draw them. I don't really play them. I just know how they're structured and make them manually. But
no, I mean, you're really talented, but that's great, man. Well, as far as for me, as far as like learning and stuff, I did take a seminary class last semester also, and that was really good. I took pastoral counseling. Very, very good. Learned a lot, but this semester I'm not doing a class just because with the wedding planning wrapping up for the summer, just needed the extra time. So, but I am trying to be more intentional about, do you know Bible Project Classroom? Have we talked about that before?
I think I know what it is through context. So obviously the Bible Project videos, everyone likes to play those. And then there's like the online learning aspect as well.
Yep. Yep. So it's literally like Tim Mackey sat down with like 8 people in a room and they've just filmed basically him teach. I mean, they say it's seminary level, but you never know, I guess. But basically it's just, they have all these different classes. They seem really, really cool. I'm doing one called Introduction to the Hebrew Bible. And it's just really, I just feel like I learned so much from his way of thinking about the Bible. I mean, he's got like his doctorate and he like speaks fluent Hebrew and Greek. So it's just like, crazy. He's crazy smart. But anyway, just learning a lot from that has been great. Seeing the Old Testament as, I don't know, just, I feel like we, I don't know. It's just so easy for it to feel familiar and for that to be a detriment to us because we don't think about it like it is, which is a foreign ancient text, you know, seeing the Bible as, you know, intentional, ancient, foreign communication and trying to, he says, love our ancient neighbor by trying to understand, you know, the significance of what they were talking about based on the culture of what they were experiencing. And not that that changed. I mean, it doesn't really change the message all that much, unless it's like a really confusing passage, but it just, it is, you know, you can't, this is a huge thing, and I'll leave it at this, but, communication with ancient people only goes correct, one way, yeah, right? We only have what they decided to write down. And so we can't go and ask them what they meant. And this is true of the New Testament too, but especially with the Old Testament, right? I mean, it's just, it's, some of it is like actually ancient. And so all we have to work with is the word that they left us. And so that's, some people I think feel like it's nitpicky to drill down into, you know, what is the Hebrew word or what's the Greek word or Aramaic word and what's the possible meanings and what's the context and let's do the, you know, some people think that's too much, but I really feel like, I don't know, I feel like it's worth it. It's God's word. I mean, if we're going to stake our life on it, like I really I want to know what it says and I want to grasp the meaning and I want to get it as close to what the original authors intended as possible. So it's a really cool class. That's I guess what I'm learning, and it's been really good. Check it out. It's free. It's really cool.
I have had this New Year's resolution or goal or whatever it's called now, and I've had it for a long time, and I've always wanted to do it, and it's been making a budget, because if you ever listen to Dave Ramsey, the ultimate finance expert, he's like, you got to make a budget. All successful millionaires make a budget. That's my, I could probably do better if I got into the flow state there, but that's my impression of Dave Ramsey, and I really think there's something to it. But of course, he peddles his own app. Ramsey Company has a pretty popular app called Every Dollar, and I've messed around with it, and it's tried to get it to work, and it's okay, but it just never really clicked with my brain. It's always like, I feel like I'm fighting it, and I can't get the categories to go where I want, and then just stuff isn't lining up, and like no matter, and then I'm trying to like make the categories work, but then it's like not an every dollar budget. Like there's somehow a phantom $1 extra in the system. And I just was super annoying. And I was like, I can't believe anyone would do this. I'm not going to budget. Take that, Dave Ramsey. But then I was like, well, if I'm going to have a full-time job and pay for stuff and live my life, I probably do need to have a budget, because I can't be this person that like says, I have no clue where my money's going. And, you know, random subscriptions are going out. And I think that's what sometimes people don't realize about budgeting, because you have like a lot of either monthly or in today's subscription laden world, we have a lot of either yearly or monthly subscriptions going out. And it's like, feels chaotic, because it's like, wait, when's that thing due? It's like $20 September once a year. And then it's like another thing is $5 on the 13th, except sometimes not. And it's like just a lot to keep track of. And I was like, how do you keep track of this with a budget? Because that just feels complicated. So enter, this is definitely not an ad. It should be, maybe they should pay me. You need a budget. YNAB, YNAB. I don't know. However, sometimes I say YABNAB, which doesn't make any sense, but it's called You Need a Budget. It's really good. It is paid. Just be warned there. Like Every Dollar is paid. There's not really a free version. There's a free version of Every Dollar that doesn't link to your bank that you can kind of manual enter stuff in. There's not really a free version for YNAB. I mean, once you exhaust the trial period of 45 days or whatever, you have to pay if you want to use it. But it does hook up to your credit card and your bank, and it lets you make categories and import everything and decide how much money is assigned to each. It is very slick and it's very nice, and it works so well with my brain. Every Dollar did not work well with my brain. I just could not get it to work. But this way, I was pretty much up and running within a couple of weeks, and I was playing around with it, and there were some parts I didn't understand, and then I was able to eventually understand it by messing around for a long time. Budgets are good because they help savers and spenders. If they're a spender, it gives you permission to save. Hey, set this aside, don't touch it. If you're a saver by nature, it gives you permission to spend, which is what I need, because I made a category for books where I'm like, hey, I want to purchase books, and I have a job, so I'm going to purchase books, but how much a month can I do? And so then I get to make, and then the amount rolls over. So maybe I don't use the full amount, but that's okay. It builds up throughout the year, and then I can revisit it and buy the books later. And then it shows up in either my bank or credit card that I bought them. And then it draws down the category and everything just works out great. And then it generates all these graphs and lets you say, here's what you spent on. I've only been doing it for a couple of months, so the graphs aren't as good as they could be, but it says, here's what you spent on this. Here's what you spent on this. It allows you to see basically even let's say it's a $40 subscription that comes out yearly, like is charged yearly in September, it will like inherently put $3.33 in the category every month to build up for September. Or if it's like earlier, it will calculate it. If you like start that category mid-cycle, it will just calculate the exact amount you need each month so that it's ready in time so you can build up that category and then empty it, and then it goes back to the 333. So it's really smart, and you could basically say, here's exactly how much subscriptions are costing me. Because before it was up in the air. It's like different things are happening at different times of the year and different monthly and annual things. And here it's like, nope, this is the exact number I spent on subscriptions. So it's this exact money gets set aside. And the thing with the budget is it's look at your bank and it's giving every dollar a job. Every dollar, hence the name of that one app, every dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But for a zero-based budget, every single dollar has a job. It is either being set aside for next month. It's being set aside to be moved to savings. It's being set aside because basically, let's say there's a $40 subscription. It's making it so that, $40 exists in your bank account and its job is to sit there until like one password takes it. And then we need to find another $40 within the next year and sit there. And then one password takes it and the circle of life continues. So I've really been enjoying using it. I like it a lot. It's worth paying for and not a whole lot of notes there. Just lets you be a little more intentional. I don't know what you do with yours, Joe, or if you do one, but it's one of those adult things that I just couldn't get it to work on the one app. But then I found an app that I did like instead.
Yeah, dude. No, I love hearing that, honestly, because I think just as a general principle for me personally, clarity is like a huge thing for me. Like what rings true through every thought that I have is I want to be clear. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what's happening. I mean, a budget is literally like the most clear you can be with your money. And I love it. I've been budgeting for a while. And I know we've talked about it before. I do use every dollar. So I was feeling the heat from some of the flaming you were doing there. But it's not perfect, but I use it because it's free. and it's a good way for me to like keep track of everything. So I did look at yours, though. It looks nice. So maybe someday I'll use that. But
oh, I had a moment of panic. Like, am I sharing my screen? But you went to the YNAB website.
Yeah, I did.
And
I did.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you might don't look at mine. No, it's very private. Yeah. Private information. Yeah. I was like, no, you looked at the
website. That's funny. I am engaged, as I've mentioned. So that means financial conversations are very frequent for me now, because my finances are not just mine. They won't just be mine. And so having a budget, you would be shocked how often I visit the budget and I say, we can't go out to eat again this month because we've already used all the restaurant money, unless you want to pay for it. Right. and it's obviously it's unfortunate, right? You don't want to be the drill sergeant all the time. That's some of the way that the Lord has really grown me this past semester. And that is, money is a tool. And if all I do is serve it and hoard it, that's not at all living how God wants me to live with it. So part of it is, I know how much I can give. I know how much I can treat the people I love. Again, just to kind of circle it back around that clarity point that I made first, like it is the best thing to like clarify your money. If you feel, and I'm not talking to you, Zachary, I'm talking to like if someone's listening and if you feel like before you know it, all the money from your paycheck's gone. It's like you just don't even know where it went. Like that is what a budget is so helpful for. You can see, your debt. You can see how much you make. You can see where every single freaking dollar goes. And there's no hiding it. There's no, that's a $2 purchase. I just, it's whatever. It's like, no, it's not whatever. Like you got to track that somewhere. That's going miscellaneous or groceries or, rest or whatever, right? Like every dollar is accountable and you have to put it somewhere. And it's really helpful for me personally. I know not everybody loves them, but I am really glad to hear like you found a system that works for you. So that's great, man. That's really great.
Cause what you have to do is you have to shop from your budget essentially. So if you want to go out to eat and it costs, I don't know, I would say 20 for two people, but this is 2026. That probably won't happen. So let's say at least 25 for two people. You don't look at your bank account and say, well, I have a balance that is greater than $25. Time to go out to eat. You look at your budget categories. You shop from that.
Exactly.
And you say, are any of these many dollars in my bank account assigned to the category? And if they are,
yes.
Or maybe there's only 10, in which case you have to like split a Chick-fil-A sandwich or I don't know how that all works. Not trying to cast aspersions on your relationship, but or the other thing is like the budget is dynamic. It's designed to work with you. So you can say, this eating out category seems like way too little. We're using it way too much. Let's increase it. And then maybe we aren't driving as much. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up or we aren't buying as much clothes. So, these categories can shift and adapt in real time and whatever, and it's fine. So it's designed to work with you, not against you.
I mean, I hear studies all the time. You hear studies all the time of how many people just live paycheck to paycheck or even worse, are just kind of consistently dipping more and more into debt because they just don't even, it's just like, literally, like you said, like I look at my bank account and I have more than what I need. So I'll just spend it, and it's, I think a budget reminds you, it's almost never about how much money you actually have. It's about how much money you've allotted to where you need it to go. And it's just so helpful. And it's one of those things you start doing and you realize, oh, that's why everybody tells me that this is important, you know, because it, like you said, it gives you permission to spend. It gives you permission to save. It helps you feel like you're actually building towards something, you know? And like you said, in a world of subscriptions, it's just nice to know where your money is, where your money's going on a consistent basis, instead of checking your bank account and being like, oh man, like I did not have as much as I thought I did, or, you know, stuff like that. So I'm a huge, huge budgeting fan, and I'm glad to hear that you're on the train. So even if it's not every dollar.
The other thing you can do is you can make a goal where you say like, hey, in X amount of months, I want $1,000 saved up for this thing. And then it just has you put in like 50 a month or something. And it does the math for you all behind the scenes, but it lets you build up. Like, it's almost like a piggy bank. Each month you put it in, at the end, you break the metaphorical piggy bank and you get your thing at the end. So kind of lets you be a little more intentional there. And yeah, honestly, I recommend YNAB. Joe's in the Ramsey pocket there. So he likes every dollar, and that's fine. Good for him. But, you know, I enjoy it a lot. It's good data. And, you know, it's one of those adult things that I, he's holding up the Financial Peace University on video.
I literally got this as a pre-wedding gift.
To someone trying to give you a message. It's just like when grandma gets you deodorant for Christmas, like, hey, buddy, I want to tell you something. Like, is that an offensive gift? I don't know.
Yeah. It was actually my good friend. He's married. And I was like, hey, what do I need to know about like financially being married? You know? And he was like, let me just send you Financial Peace University. So
no, it's good. Yeah. And yeah, that's the supposed thing couples fight over the most. So just don't be another statistic, Joe.
For all of your budgeting needs, don't ask us. And, you know, just Dave Ramsey, everything.
Please consult a financial professional. This is not tax advice. Oh, wait, maybe it is.
This is not tax advice.